Welcome to episode 148 of the Atomic Powered Supercast with your hosts Andrew, David, and Jim. This week we read Young Avengers by Kyron Gillen, and now the cast begins.
Okay, one or two, it's Ranma. Two or three or four, it's Fruits Basket, and five or six, it's Udasai Yetsuda. Okay. Oh, it's Ranma. Ranma went ahead.
Woo!
Let's do
Andy,
it.
Do you know about Ranma?
Nope.
It's a
no.
Dude?
You spelled it wrong, Andy.
I'm sure I did.
Is it water that does it?
Yeah.
Basically, anytime he gets wet, he turns into a girl, and vice, like, anytime she, like, yeah, hilarity ensues.
Wait, like, water wet, or, like, sexually wet?
Water wet.
Wet.
Okay, I just had to be sure.
I'm not reading that. It's a kid's manga.
Oh, I didn't know this. Wait, what's the fruit one?
That's the one about the Zodiac thing, where they get hugged.
Okay.
Okay, Jen, I'm going to post the link to Udasai Yetsuda's Wikipedia page for you.
Okay.
It's you could probably just watch the anime. It's really funny.
Okay, you guys ready to start?
Andy, you would probably like Udasai Yetsuda, too.
Okay. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Was that a yes, David?
Oh, yeah. I'm just taking a deep breath.
All right, everybody. Welcome to another reality-altering episode of the Atomic Powered Supercast. My name is Andy, and I'm hanging out with Jen.
Hey.
And David.
Yay.
And we're moving on with our Marvel Youngin' series by reading the second volume, well, the second run of Young Avengers, but the first volume of that.
No, I think it's Young Avengers Volume 2.
Yeah.
Is what they call it.
Okay, well, it's Young Avengers. The name of the series is Style Over Substance. Collects Young Avengers 1 to 5 from last year, so it's not out in trade just yet, and I totally didn't mention that yesterday. But it's those five issues and a Marvel Now thing that I really couldn't find. Did you guys find the Marvel Now thing at all?
No. I bought the singles from my local comic book store, and I couldn't figure out what the Marvel Now thing was. And it's not on... blah, blah, blah. It's not on Comixology either,
okay.
So I couldn't figure out what it is.
All right, well, whatever. Maybe Amazon was lying to me. But it was written by Kyron Gillen and Jamie...
McKelvey.
Oh, Jamie McKelvey! I've heard the name before. Okay, so that's who drew for this. So what did you guys think of this one? This definitely happened after the first one, and I like that we had holdovers from the same team, and they still called themselves the Young Avengers. How old are they now, do you think?
I think
because they were like 15 before, right?
I think one of the parents says that Teddy is 17.
Yes.
Okay. Cuz they're all still underage cuz Kid Loki has to fake all their IDs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Which was great.
Well, actually, do you get the idea that Miss America is maybe older, because she says something about, like, how she doesn't want to swear in front of kids.
Yeah, I could...
And Kate Bishop's definitely older, because, I mean, it opens with her having a one-night stand.
Well, you don't gotta be older to have a one-night stand.
No, but I think
she was 17 in Volume 1.
Yeah, I think media tends to portray women who are no longer teenagers as the ones who have one night stands rather than teenagers.
Right. And she did that inner monologue that she has in the beginning. You kind of get the sense that she's older. Like she says, I think I should feel ashamed, but then I think that that's stupid. You know, like that's a more mature mindset than a teenager would have, I think. Plus at the end, it mentions that she's also been hanging out with Hawkeye, and I don't think Hawkeye would let her hang out with him if she was still like a teenager in high school. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like I, even though Hawkeye is kind of more like the renegade kind of character in the Avengers, he wouldn't be down for that. But yeah, I think Miss America Chavez is a little bit old. And okay, wait, What? Okay, David, you might be able to provide me background. Do you have any idea where Miss America Chavez is from?
No, not a clue.
What about Novar?
So Novar, I don't really know exactly what his background is. I first read something with him in Secret Invasion, actually, and they mention it in here because he fought against the Young Avengers and the Runaways. They, like, teamed up, and they were fighting Novar. And then he stuck around after he became part of the Avengers for a little while. Leading up to it was in the pre-Marvel Now stuff. So actually it was in AVX was the last time he was part of the Avengers. And he got like the Nega Bands, which are what Captain Marvel, Marvel used. And he was a character called Protector. And that didn't work out. So then he now just hangs out in his spaceship, I guess. And
banging hot superheroes.
Yeah, but what? So he's a Kree from another dimension, like an alternate, maybe not another dimension, but like an alternate universe. Okay. And he has like insect DNA, which is why he's super agile.
Okay.
And he's something like about being jointed or something,
like part cockroach, right?
Yeah.
You mentioned that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's what that is. Okay.
So he's like triple jointed or something like that.
The part that confused me is it seems like he and Kate Bishop would have run into each other before, except she doesn't know his name.
I mean, run into each other, run into each other.
I mean, Kate? Probably. Yeah, like if he was fighting the Young Avengers at some point.
Yeah, somebody mentions it. I think maybe it was Billy or Teddy, but it was, I don't remember if it was the full lineup of the Young Avengers.
Okay. Because
it was a crossover with the Runaways too.
She, when she first wakes up, she can't remember who he is. And then she's like, oh yeah, you fought us one time.
She calls him Norman.
Yeah. I definitely appreciate his love for 60s, like, mod pop music.
Right?
What even?
What? How did he describe it, too? Like, this music with four women in harmony. And the drums. We don't have drums like this where I'm from. But what did you guys... So, what did you guys think of the differences between the writing in this Young Avengers and the other Young Avengers? I think what stuck out to me the most was, like, there are things in the older one that feels like were handled in a more mature way. Like, the fact that Billy and Teddy were gay. It was just kind of like they were a couple and they cared for each other. And if you noticed, you noticed. And if you didn't, you didn't. That's just what they were. But in here, there's just, like, there's a big panel. Them kissing, you know. And I think that's great that Marvel feels comfortable publishing that, but it feels also a little in your face-ish.
So I have a lot of words on that whole thing. And I think the whole problem isn't their romance or even that they're explicitly gay, because I think they came out in the previous run anyway.
Yeah.
It's that this was a really melodramatic conversation. And the way it was framed too, it's like, you know, the background suddenly turns orange and we see action lines when Billy is shouting, and, you know, it's written very... Some of the prose in this is very clunky, like a bad soap opera, where people are like, how could you? And then people are like, but you don't understand me, and all the problems in a form of exposition that I'm going to give the reader in a really clumsy way. And I feel like this writing had some really good strengths. Like, there was a really nice sense of comedic timing that the previous run didn't have, but I feel like there was a lot more melodrama, and it made scenes like that feel a lot more awkward than they should have. So that's my gripe. That is my main gripe about this comic. Too much melodrama.
Yeah, I can see that, but I also really... As much as I agree with that, and I think that's why maybe that scene of them kissing feels like it sticks out to me, because it's like this really, really charged scene, and then it's solved by two men kissing on a page. And that, like, I'm fine with gay people, like, and I think they should be able to print that in a comic, but I don't know. Something about the presentation made me feel like it was supposed to be in my face. Versus something like Kate Bishop having what would have been a one-night stand if it hadn't been for the Skrull invasion. Right? Like, to me, that felt a lot more organic in that, like, she woke up, she had that thought of, I should be ashamed. Wait, no, fuck it. That's stupid. I'm a grown-ass woman making a grown-ass woman decision, and fuck, this alien boy is hot anyway, you know? Like, that came from a place of writing that I felt was really organic, or at least looked organic, but the other just kind of didn't. I don't know. But either way, these weren't problems that we encountered in the last issue either, the last run. Well, David, what did you think of the differences, like, in style between the two?
I don't know. I feel I agree with what you guys said. I wanted to say, first, my initial thought was this is maybe targeted for a different audience, but I don't think that's necessarily true. Because I don't think either Volume 1 or this Volume 2 are directed at a particular audience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's easy to say, oh, this is a book about teens, so it must be directed for teens. But I don't think that's necessarily true. I feel like all comics are kind of... comics are just kind of directed at comics fans, and people like what they like, you know. This felt a lot more lighthearted than Volume 1. Volume 1... I feel like Volume 1 was more about superhero problems. And this one is more about superheroes who happen to be teens having teen problems to a little bit of a degree.
No, I see where you're coming from.
Yeah,
I definitely agree with that.
I was just going to say, this one is more about, you know, Volume 1 was about them trying to figure out their place in a world full of superheroes, being, you know, they're new superheroes in a post-Avengers world, because this was directly after Avengers Disassembled. So the world had just experienced this thing about how the Avengers are a bad thing, right? And so now these kids want to be superheroes, so the old guard, Captain America and Iron Man, are telling them, you know, this is a bad idea. You don't want to be a superhero because it's dangerous, and look what happened to us. We were, like, experienced heroes, and we totally screwed everything over. Here, it's like they're fighting evil parents, you know? They're not really parents. They're like these, like, Invasion of the Body Snatcher type creature things. But they're kind of like... they're fighting their parents, essentially.
It felt very much like Runaways. Like, that tension between, like, oh, I like my parents, and then, oh, they're actually evil. But here it didn't really build up, because it turned out it was never their parents, so...
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think it was pretty obvious from, like, immediately that Teddy's mom was not Teddy's mom.
Yeah.
Yeah. So wait, which one do you guys think best encapsulated, not necessarily the teen experience, but the youth experience? Because these aren't all teens, and they're varying ages. Which do you think best embodied that young experience?
I would say the first volume, because... I think that a pitfall of people writing teens is that they fall back on teen problem tropes, like parents. And, you know, sometimes that can be good because it's a good topic to explore, but
like
it can also feel like, yeah, it can feel overdone, too, if you do it the wrong way. And I kind of think that in the first one, it was more like, okay, here are young people put in a position of power and responsibility, and they don't really know what they're doing. How do they cope with this? How do they make big decisions? going by their age and also, like, their other responsibilities as kids. Like, for instance, someone makes a comment like, oh, I can't practice tonight, it's a school night. So, like, how do you balance that life as a young person? And I feel like that's a question that's not asked as often, and therefore was maybe not, like, more relevant, but more interesting to me personally.
Yeah. My answer to that question would have been this one, because at first I was thinking, yeah, this one doesn't grapple with big concepts the same way. Like, the last one we talked about, like, the idea of the morality between whether or not Kang should stay or go, and the lives that hang in the balance, and all of that kind of bigger mental stuff, until David said that those heroes were trying to find their place in the world without the Avengers. And then I was like, that's what being young is all the fuck about, is trying to find a place in the world that doesn't involve your parents. You know, like, even if you're a teenager, you're trying to find your identity aside from what your parents have put into you. That's what being a teenager is about. And then when you go away to college, you have to fill out that identity of self even more that you've already tried to establish. And so really being that age is all about trying to find your place in the world. And that's what all this comic is about. It's just, instead of saying, oh, you're fighting your parents, the stand-in for their parents is the Avengers saying you shouldn't do this. It's dangerous. You need to just go home and do homework. I didn't even caught that analogy from last week until you mentioned, David, that this is all about finding their place.
Yeah. I mean, they're trying to fill a void. They notice that the Avengers are gone, right? And so now they're trying to fill a void, but the shoes they are trying to fill are impossible. Massive. It's impossible to fill. Wiccan can never be Thor, no matter how hard he tries, right? And that is okay, but I don't think they realize that they want to be the Avengers instead of being themselves, ultimately being the Young Avengers. And, you know, by the end of, I think at the end of the sixth issue, they do to a degree. If you read the rest of the run, if you read to issue 12, I feel like they definitely figure out how they fit into the Marvel Universe.
Yes.
They don't have to be the Avengers. Yes, they all take cues from other heroes, right? I mean, Iron Lad, well, he's not a great example. Yeah. You know, Vision is Vision. Stature is Ant-Man / Giant Man. Patriots, Captain America, etc., etc. And by the end of the 12th issue, they figure all that out. In this one, I'm not really sure. Like, well, I think what Jen said is great about how the similarities to the Runaways. I mean, that's how issue 5 ends, is they have to leave their home because it's too dangerous for them to be there, because these, you know, whatever these creatures are, or these shape-shifting things, they're there. If they're near their parents or their place of their parents' death, this thing comes back, right? At least that's what I gathered at the end.
Yeah.
And so it's, instead of trying to find their place, like in Volume 1, they're running away from the place they had before with no destination.
So if last week was the analogy for high school and teenage youth, is this the analogy for, like, your college years? When you've identified yourself, you've become your own person, these guys have been heroes for a while, they've made that, they've gotten the respect of the Avengers that they can just walk up, ring the doorbell, and get let in. But is this kind of the analogy to your parents trying to get you to come back home? Or is that too... is it stretching our analogy too far?
I don't know if this fits into that box perfectly. I still it's hard for me to see where this is going. It was more clear cut in Volume 1.
Yeah,
and I think it's okay to have a direction laid out in front of the reader.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's a bad thing. Twists are not always the right thing to do.
Yeah.
Here, I don't know where it's going, and I'm not. that's not a mark against it. I'm just saying that that's why I don't, it's hard for me to say what this represents in the young person life experience, like which segment this is.
Yeah.
Because not all of them, their age range or maturity levels, I think is Loki in particular, you know, he's not really a teenager.
Yeah, his body is the youngest.
But it's this evil old Loki inside the kid body, right?
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
Yeah.
I guess is what I'm trying to say.
And plus, this is a much larger story. Like, by the end of this trade, when it comes out, I mean, what happened with the Skrulls? Did they completely repel that invasion? It's like, that's what the comic book opens with, but it's just kind of left up there in space?
I think they address it in issue 6.
Okay.
Which we did not read.
The next issue, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I just wanted to address what you said about, like, these arcs representing life stages, and as you guys were talking, I thought about it, and I realized, I feel like this second volume is actually characterized more by not, like, trying to find independence or having found it and being your own person so much as a longing for home and family, because this whole mess happens because Teddy really wants to see his mother again, and he can't because she's dead, and, you know, that's upsetting. And then in the end, even though they're trying to get away from the parents is kind of like the major action of the comic, there really is a strong pull of, like, I wish I could come home, but you don't even understand what's happening here, and, you know, I can't. So it's more like exile than anything else. So I'm not quite sure it fits into that second stage of life, you know, after high school. It seems maybe a bit darker than that.
Yeah, it kind of feels that way to me because, I don't know, when I first left for college, I eschewed going to a, like, 2-year community college to go straight to a 4-year university away from my parents. And so I felt like every time I went back to that place, when I went back home, it was kind of me foregoing or giving up that independence. So it was like a thing of pride to stay away. But you have that pull back to your family, of course, all the time. So it's like that balance, you know? And I think that's the one thing I tied into with myself and these characters was that want for them to find a balance between being at home and having to stay away. But you're right, it's like, it's not quite like that, because they can't go home or their parents will try to capture them and throw them in a little white box. A fourth wall. Little fourth wall box.
Yeah.
So what did you guys think of the additions to the team? What did you guys think of Kid Loki?
Oh, he's the best. He's the best ever.
So he came from, he spun out of Siege. No, not Siege. Siege.
Yeah.
He spun out of Siege. And so they had the Journey into Mystery series, which was actually also written by Kieron Gillen. And it was really, really good. And so I was excited to read him in this. And I think that, you know, it's the same writer. So the same character carried over. And I really enjoyed him because of that. I think this take on Loki is very cool. And it's very original. Like, who would have thought that making Loki a kid would be such a cool take on the character, a cool new direction, you know?
Well, like that it... Oh, go ahead, Jen.
Oh, I was actually going to ask, some of it was explained with Loki's conscience talking to him and the reader directly, but could you actually explain those events? Because I feel like I was a little lost on exactly what happened up to this point.
So during Siege, so Loki, Siege is the event following Dark Reign, and basically it's Asgard's on Earth, it's moved to Earth, and it's under siege by bad guys, and Loki kind of set all of it in motion, but his intention wasn't for Asgard to get destroyed, he wanted to take over Asgard. Which is like Loki's it's always his goal.
Yeah.
But when he realized that shit is going way too far, he kind of sacrifices himself to help defeat the Sentry. And so they win, but Loki dies.
Sure.
And then in following that, Thor, I forget how, but he brings Loki back, but Loki comes back as a kid.
Okay.
And so then Journey into Mystery is kind of what happens during Loki, the things Loki does during Fear Itself, and leads into Marvel Now.
So
when the Marvel when it switched from when it became Marvel Now, is when Loki, when Journey into Mystery stopped following Loki, and started follow, and Loki moved to Young Avengers.
So
that's the gist of it.
So is this Loki good or bad? Like I didn't entirely grasp what was going on with that. So the spirit, the conscience floating around, was the little boy that was actually good, and the spirit inhabiting Loki was the previous iteration of Loki that was actually evil.
Yes, I believe that's correct. So when Loki, during Journey into Mystery, Loki had a raven that followed him around called Eikol, and that was the original Loki.
Okay.
He would try to give him advice, and it would be like pretty much, it would basically be bad advice.
Of course.
Or he would give him advice on how to be Loki.
Okay.
Because the kid Loki, when he was resurrected, was pretty much, he was resurrected at this age, but he was kind of not a, he was not the same Loki. He kind of reverted to that point in his life, and he couldn't really remember everything. And one of the big stories during Journey into Mystery was how, even though this Loki was a new person, everyone in Asgard recognized him as the old Loki. Like, they thought it was going to be the same old shit.
Okay. Well, knowing that the evil one's in there really helps me understand this character and what he's been doing. Because I appreciate that putting him in this body sort of weakens his ability as a reality alterer, kind of magician, sorcerer kind of person. Mm-hmm. But I like that, even with that taken away, he is still a god of mischief. And he can still really, really fuck with people without any powers at all. Just with words. Was he talking to... I get Teddy and Billy mixed up. Like
Teddy.
Teddy, when he's talking to Teddy and being like, it's just real convenient, isn't it, buddy? Real convenient. I was like, oh, shit. That's fucked up, but it might also be true.
That made me, like, oh, I was just like, that was so messed up. Because, you know, what if it is true? And then what if they do take that in a direction and it causes unnecessary drama in this comic, as it always does in TV shows? And there's just so many problems with that. But it's true, and it's horrible, and he didn't have to say that. It was evil of him.
I've never seen a Skrull that looks like him.
Like Teddy. That's
a real handsome Skrull.
He's half Skrull, half Kree.
Yeah, he's also the son of Mar-Vell.
That's true.
And there are pink Kree, and Mar-Vell is a pink Kree. It's like, because mostly they're blue, right?
Yeah, and Mar-Vell looks human a lot of the time, right?
Right.
Like, they draw him like that.
Because he's a pink Kree. He changed it to look like a human. The pink Kree just look human.
Okay.
Is basically how it is. They probably wrote that in because they probably made Captain Marvel and then were like, oh, wait, he looks different.
Yeah, but that moment in the comic, like, I liked the scene with Loki saying, you guys watch Game of Thrones, right? What's your favorite character? Like, that scene was great because I was like, oh my god, yeah, maybe. And then we got to this and I'm like, oh no, you're not. You're worse. You're a fucking terrible person. True or not, you're fucking terrible. Because this boy, even if all of reality was altered to make Wiccan happy, right? And Hulkling is just the quote-unquote victim of that. He is such a happy victim. Like, even if so, the situation they're in harms nobody. Even if Loki's right, it harms nobody. But I mean, is he right? It's a good enough lie that it could be, if it isn't.
The thing is, anytime that sort of thing is insinuated in most stories, it gets followed up with, like, someone getting really unnecessarily upset and then causing problems and drama because of it. And I don't know if the author's going to do that here or not, or if he's just going to, like, resolve it gracefully. Because he did resolve some things very gracefully in this.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he's sowing seeds for further plot.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
So what about Novar? What did you guys think of Marvel Boy?
He's okay. I liked him when he was in the Avengers better, when he was Protector.
Yeah.
He was more powerful and cooler then. I think Oh, sorry, go ahead, Jen.
Oh, I was just going to say, I feel like he could have been a little more fleshed out here. We don't know much about him.
I think most of what we get is, come with me if you want to be awesome.
Yeah.
Which is a pretty cool line.
It's good flavor. Yeah.
But that's good character because he is obviously really, really cocky, right? You don't say that line unless you are one cocky motherfucker.
And the thing is,
he is pretty awesome. And they all saw it when he bust through that room. They all went, whoa.
And he's certainly like that in the other comics where I've read him, particularly the Civil War, the one where he encounters the Runaways and the Young Avengers.
Yeah. Yeah, but I agree. He's kind of just in here. I think it's because he was out in space fighting so much. We didn't get much of him. We didn't get much of grown-up Kate Bishop either in this. He's just kind of there. But the person we did get a little bit more of, that I want to know more of, is Miss America Chavez. What did you guys think of this character?
She was cool, but I'm just... I want to put out that she also really needed to be fleshed out, because sometimes... At least I felt she kind of came across as, like, the fiery Latina stereotype more than as, like, an actual person. And I know she's an actual person because you get, like, these wonderful hints of personality from her. And she just, like, her retorts to Loki are pretty great, too. But I wanted a lot more of her in this comic.
Yeah, I want to know so much more about her because she seems almost like a Superman-type character. In terms of strength and ability. Mm-hmm. And you don't see that very much in Marvel. And when you do see it, it's either Mr. Retcon, Sentry, who ends up being evil. You know, like, Marvel, the laws of the way Marvel's universe works doesn't tend to allow characters like that. So first, I'm wondering where the hell she came from. And then I want to know more about her because her parents seem alien or extra-dimensional somehow. And so then why is she Miss America Chavez? Why is she the embodiment of that second generation immigrant that feels like they need to overgo their Americanism to feel like they fit in? Like, that's a thing that happens in life, you know, people who are like, I like that that's embodied in this comic and that gives those people a character to tie into. But like, how does that come out of extra dimensional parents? It just seems non sequitur to me.
Yeah.
Why is she even Latina?
Strange.
Yeah, I don't know anything about this character. I think she might be new for this comic.
Really? Oh, then I gotta keep reading this.
Yeah, I don't mind that some of the characters aren't totally fleshed out, but that's because I want to read it more, so it's not a big deal. I'm gonna find out anyway. And I think they're only up to issue 9 so far.
Yeah, we've read, I think, more than half of what they've written.
Yeah.
So far. But I knew she was my character in this comic when Kid Loki's like, we need a plan. And then she says, punch everyone. Like, that's my hero. That's the character I glom onto. Punch everyone. You don't need a plan beyond that. If you're a fucking superhero, just punch them all until they're dead. At that point, I was like, who is this person? Why are they not in everything that Marvel writes? What about the old characters? Does anybody stand out as, like, changing significantly for you? I think that was the only kind of dud for me, is that a lot of these characters feel the same.
I feel like Billy and Teddy were a lot more dramatic. Like, they were so chill in the first volume.
Mm-hmm.
They were just, like, very reasonable people who did reasonable things, and now they're all screaming at each other, and Billy's about to kill himself, and it was just like, whoa, tone it down.
I liked Kate a lot. I feel like it seems like she's found herself as a, like, what, you know, I talked about how volume one of Young Avengers was them trying to find their place. I think Kate is now comfortable in her role as a superhero, being Hawkeye and what she does and stuff, you know.
Yeah, that's a perfect way to put it, because in the first one, when they raid Avengers Mansion, she just grabs everything, right? She's like, just grab all the weapons you can, just grab all the weapons. But in this one, when she raids the Kree battleship, she picks out the bow, and she doesn't pick it up because it's a bow. She picks it up because she says confidently, it's not old, it's vintage, and I like things that are vintage, right?
Yes.
Like, and that might be, like, vintage stuff might be fatty, whatever, who knows, but, like, whether or not this vintage thing that she has is a fad in her life, it comes from a place of confidence, whereas before, she wasn't coming from a place of confidence grabbing all of the weapons. Now she's like, oh yeah, this is a bow. I like the way bows work. I know how bows work because it's vintage. Everybody knows how it fucking works because it's old. So I'm going to fucking use the thing that I know and trust is reliable. Like, that comes from a place of confidence that you don't get if you're not sure of yourself that way.
Yeah, she came off the whole time as more mature than in the first volume. And, like, someone who's clearly becoming just a classy lady. I thought she was actually really classy in this. So.
And that's good writing. If you can open up the first page of a comic with a one-night stand, and then by the end have your reader say, that's a classy lady. Good writing.
Yeah.
Not that if you have a one-night stand, it excludes you from being a classy lady. I'm just saying, in the span of 5 issues, that's a bit of an accomplishment if your first impression is one-night stand. God, I just contradict myself so hard right there. What did we think of the art?
Oh my god, the frames were so cool. Like, every issue there was something about the art that I really liked. So the first one where we see Kate gearing up for the Skrull attack,
yeah,
and all those little frames, and she's like, you know, being a superhero is awesome in the big text scattered across the 2-page spread was so good. And then when Billy gets thrown into the, like, fourth wall white panels.
Yeah, that was really cool.
So those creative.
Awesome.
Go on. Sorry, I'm just going to keep talking.
I like the part where Loki, I think it's in issue 5. Yeah, it's in issue 5 where Loki kind of lends the power to everyone. He powers everyone up. He's, like, sitting in the pentagram in the middle, and it shows everybody else fighting. I thought that was really cool. That was really good framing.
Yeah.
What did you guys stand on the big two-page spread, where it's like the numbers on the side and then Novar going through the room?
That was awesome.
Love it.
That was awesome.
Love it forever. It reminded me of what we saw in Teen Titans with Kid Flash, but I thought this one was a lot funnier because there's like just... So, there are so few words, and in each corner it's like, I knew the original Hawkeye, didn't sleep with him, he was a guy, also liked purple, and I cracked up. And then the little numbers weren't just to show you when things happened, but also the commentary, and I thought that was worked in so well.
Yeah.
So it was like, hope Kate was watching this, and it was so funny. I love that spread. Obviously, I like the art in this comic quite a bit.
You know what I think Marvel's doing with this kind of stuff that works really well? I feel like Marvel is taking normal comic book artists and giving them a crash course in, like, graphic design. Because it's not just here. We get the same kind of thing in Hawkeye, which is a newer thing that we've read. And I think it comes up in Future Foundation. I haven't read it. I just see things on Tumblr. But it seems
awesome. I love that comic so much.
It seems like Marvel is taking traditional comics and giving him that touch that makes them feel cool. That I think only comes from design. That, like, just like playing with the font, playing with the framing in a way that feels clean in a designer kind of way, and it's perfect. The blend is awesome. Whenever they do it, I want to encourage it. And it's most evident, I think, on the covers, too, because these covers are all phenomenal. I love the covers for these comics.
Actually, I got the issue of number one I got was the second printing, and the cover is done by Brian Lee O'Malley.
Okay. Give that props, then.
He's a, whatchamacallit, Scott Pilgrim.
Okay.
The cover's really cool. You should look it up.
I will. Later, though. Because if I do it right now, it'll slow everything down and we'll all sound really choppy. I'm with everybody else. This comic was pretty good in terms of art.
We talk about the design and stuff, but the actual, like, penciling and stuff, it was very clean. The faces were expressive. Everybody had a very distinct look. I thought that was, you know, sometimes comics, people look the same, you know?
Yeah.
It's just like hair color is different, but everybody had a distinct look, and I thought it was the penciling was excellent and the coloring was really good. Everything looked clean. Like, I think clean is a good way to say it.
Mm-hmm.
For me, at least. I thought the penciling was really good too.
And you know, I mean, just in terms of pure pencil work, the moment I was reading this and there was a panel that, or I should say, set of, like, I think it was three or four panels that made me stop and just admire the pencil work. And it wasn't anything spectacular. It wasn't like a big splash page or anything crazy like that. It was when Loki was sitting up in the cloud with the borrowed power, sitting on the pentagram, like getting ready. They were trying to decide whether or not he's going to go down and help them. And the other spirit is there. His conscience, his good conscience, is there kind of floating around him. And Kid Loki goes through a series of facial expressions, and he scowls a little bit, and the scowl was fucking perfect. It was, like, dead on for not only how a kid would scowl, but how Loki would scowl, and how this kid would do it. Like, the facial expressions in that series weren't just good facial expressions, they were fucking perfect for this specific character. And that's awesome. Like, I was looking at those and I'm like, this is just an ordinary set of panels, but I have to stop and admire this because this is perfect. This is, like, perfect facial expression in a comic.
All right.
So, legit props to Jamie McKelvey. Was there a moment that you guys liked in this other than, like, the framing stuff we already talked about?
I don't know. I don't know if I can think of anything else. Any other particular panels or that I really loved. Like I said, I think the art in general was great. It was excellent, I'd say, actually.
Oh, what about Miss America Chavez's costume?
I like it. It almost seemed like something that, like, a young fashion model would wear. Like, not someone who was just into fads, but who was, like, actually really cool. You know, it wasn't, like, so superhero. It was more, like, casual. I don't know if I'm describing that well, but it wasn't so much a uniform as, like, her outfit. And I enjoyed that about it.
Yeah, and I think that I like that costume a lot for her. Because there's kind of a thing. I hadn't ever thought of it this way until I saw her wearing that, knowing what her power set was. Because I've seen pictures of her on Tumblr before, and I'm like, okay, whatever. I guess whenever I read Young Avengers, this will come up, and I'll figure it out. But I think it's that kind of confidence, because she is so powerful. She doesn't have to give a fuck about what the hell her costume looks like. She's just going to go in what she wore to school. You know? Like, mm-hmm. Oh, this guy has to come up with a cool costume, because that way he'll feel more superhero-y, you know? He'll go out and people won't recognize him, or he'll be in an outfit that people go, oh, that's a superhero. But I think Miss America Chavez doesn't give a fuck about any of that. I think Miss America Chavez went to 6 periods of high school and then went served detention and then went out and kicked somebody's ass.
Yep.
And whatever the fuck she wore that day that looked like Miss America Chavez would wear. Like, I think just like that confidence from that. Like, I think she's that kind of personality, and I think that the outfit works well for that kind of character in a way that I hadn't even thought of before I saw this. I was like, yeah, of course Miss America fucking Chavez would wear that, because if you say anything, she's going to punch you. And you're going to die. Well, that's honestly all I had to say about this comment. You guys got anything else to add?
Don't think so.
All right.
I'm good.
That silence was a no. Who wants to rate first? How about Jen?
Andy.
Oh, God.
I'll do it.
Okay,
good. I'm good. I decided, like, 10 minutes ago. So I'm going to give this a 3.5, which I think is what I gave the last volume as well. And I will say I didn't like the writing as much. Like, I thought this was really funny. I really enjoyed the humor, and there were many points where I was actually laughing out loud. Lols. But... I don't know why I did that. I'm losing my mind. But it was, I think, as I said at the very beginning, at times too melodramatic for me. And I felt like some of the scenes were either overwrought or not worked out enough. So, like, there was too much information being given. So the drama seemed, I guess, more compact and then not as smoothly resolved because of that. So that was my gripe. But I did really like the character-to-character dialogue. Like, the interplay there was just really enjoyable. And as I said earlier, I love the art to this. So, yeah, 3.5. And I will keep reading this series, the first volume and this one.
Okay. I'll go next since David volunteered me. I'm okay. Also going to give it a 3.5. Because, you know, I really like this, but... I don't know if it's tropey or what. This just, it feels like 2010 good comic. I don't know. There's nothing about this that stands out to me as being incredibly unique. So I think that's why Miss America Chavez stands out so much to me, because it's not the kind of character that Marvel puts up there. And aside from that, I think she's a unique character, even though we don't necessarily see it here, if nothing else but for her costume and her power set. But that's about it that feels unique in this, aside from the incredibly good art that we've already talked about. So, that said, I can't put it more than a 3.5, but for being not incredibly unique, it's also really fun to read. And, like, my constant example of whether or not a comic's a good read is if I would want my fiance, who's not into comics, to read it. And I feel like she'd have fun reading this. She'd have a good time. She'd enjoy it. So, it's better than average comic. 3.5. How about you, David?
I'm also going to give it a 3.5.
Unanimous.
Yes, it's a great comic. I'm going to add this to my pull list. When it was actually first solicited, I was going to add it, and then I was like, oh, maybe I have too many comics, so I'm not going to add it. But now I'm glad we decided to read this, and I'm glad I actually bought the individual issues, because now we'll eventually have a complete run of this series, I hope. We'll have to buy 6, 7, and 8 too. No big deal.
Yeah, it's easy.
But I like this a lot, and I really like Kieran Gillen's writing. McKelvey's art was excellent. We talked about that already. But I just didn't like this as much as Volume 1. And that's why I believe I gave Volume 1 a 4. So that's why this is getting a 3.5. Maybe that's not fair because I'm comparing the two. But I liked it a lot, but not quite as much as I liked Volume 1. But I think 3.5 is a good, it's still a very good score, and I would recommend this to fans of the original series or people who like comics in general. I think this is like you said, Andy, this is a good one for people who are not necessarily comic fans but are interested in reading comics. Because it's not too, it's not so heavy on the capes, and I think that sometimes turns people off of comics.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a fun adventure with interesting, fun characters, and it's an enjoyable read. So, yeah, 3.5. I think that's a pretty fair score.
Yeah, because last week's we really liked, but I couldn't give that whole young Kang time travel.
Yeah, that
destroyed
that
the Avengers thing. I could not give that to somebody who was not into comics.
It definitely has a lot of continuity baggage, I'd say.
Yeah, that's a good
this
way.
This has a little bit of it with Loki, but it's not. It's really kind of. You don't have to have known where this kid Loki came from for this comic to make sense.
It's just like, oh, it's Loki, but it's a kid. Great. Wonderful.
Yeah.
So next week, then, we're going to wrap up our Marvel Youngins series by reading Wolverine and the X-Men. That collects Wolverine and the X-Men from 2011, written by Jason Aaron. And I know absolutely nothing about this comic. I just know that somewhere in the run of this comic, there's a really cool cover with Logan standing up at a chalkboard writing something and an entire classroom full of mutants fucking around behind his back. And I'm like, yeah, now you know what a substitute teacher feels like, this cover. And that's the entire reason we're reading it.
Yeah, I'm not sure how – I haven't read it yet, read this series yet, so I'm not sure how heavy this is on actual – young heroes, but we'll it's basically Wolverine starts the Jean Grey Institute.
Starts so his own little branch.
Yeah, it's his young mutant school.
Yeah.
So
that's next week. And we have what I'm calling a super series coming up after that. We've done another super series before, right? What was it?
I think it was 52.
52.
Yes. Oh god, 52. I didn't mean to say that negatively. It's a great comic, but that was, man, that was a lot to read in 1 month.
Yep.
So after this, we are doing a super series. And if you want to know what the topic of that one is, you can find out by going to our website at www.atomicpoweredsupercast.com. On the right, click on the button that says Future Shows. It'll tell you all 5 episodes of our upcoming super series. 5. I think this is the longest arc we've ever done.
Definitely. Definitely is.
And I
Yeah, it is.
I am excited that this is the one breaking the mold. This one, my baby. I love this shit. This is great. I think that's why I'm letting it break the mold, because it's my baby.
And I like this. I like this comic series a lot too. And Andy is the person that introduced me to it. So
I love this shit, and I cannot wait. It's gonna be fucking amazing. But if you think we could have done a super series on a different topic, or you have something you want us to read, not even super series, just one thing you want to read, like From Hell, because we read that off of a listener request, you can send us an email at
atomicpoweredsupercast@gmail.com.
And just let us know there. You can also tell us via the social media stuff, twitter.com/APSupercast, facebook.com/APSupercast. But I think most importantly, APSupercast.tumblr.com. Not because Tumblr is so much better, just... I have more fun there interacting with people, probably because I don't actually interact with them.
Andy and I tend to put a lot of stuff on the Tumblr page.
Yeah. So check us out at any of those three, though.
It doesn't always have to do with what we're reading, but it's usually things that we are currently enjoying.
Nope. I posted a Superman thing from like the 50s, like 10 minutes ago, which is hilarious. Go look at that. And as always, please subscribe to us on
iTunes.
Yep. All right, everybody. Until next week. Goodbye.
Goodbye.